Catherine Montgomery for a paper joined with Javier Lezon, Global Health New Geographies of Responsibility, Spatial and Temporal Domaining in Virtual Drug Development. This paper will focus on an ultimate new remedy to the problem of neglected diseases, orphan drugs, and so on and so forth. It means the private-public partnership, PPP, excellent acronym. And I think this topic opens the Pandora box of alliances, consortiums, all kinds of new words, in short, networks of a virtual nature, which are very difficult to control, regulate, and understand. I think it's something very important in the present health scheme.
Thank you.
Catherine.
I was going to say this is probably a topic that seems a little dry after hearing about sex. And actually,
but people are excited.
I was saying to Javier that I used to work a lot on researching sexual health research. But when I came to do research on property relations in the life sciences, it was actually seemed to be a much more sensitive topic. It's much easier to get people to talk about sexual health than about property. That's just an aside. So this is a paper that I have been working on with Javier for about the past year, trying to understand this ubiquitous discourse of sharing and partnering in pharmaceutical research and development. You'll probably have heard a lot about the problems of a pharmaceutical model which has linked innovation to the creation of private goods, the protection of private goods. And sort of there's been calls for a revolution in drug discovery that uniformly hinge on the need to loosen up the constraints that have traditionally been imposed by property rights and to usher in this new kind of era of open science. So this is what we're interested in, and nowhere, in fact, this sort of new moral economy of research, if you like, been more prevalent than in these partnerships for neglected tropical diseases, TB and malaria. So we're interested in how these partnerships are re-articulating the relationship between property and value, and how this is connected to a particular timescape. So what I'll do briefly in this presentation is I'll start by discussing the organisational models of product development partnerships, PDPs, for neglected diseases, and the role that property plays in configuring new times and spaces of the public domain. I'll discuss the work that virtualism does in the PDP business model before going on to describe what we think is quite an unusual role of intellectual property is an attractor, if you like, of different partners to these collaborations. I think it's going to become very clear quite quickly that all partners are not equal, as you might expect, and that the way in which partners use intellectual property, IP, demarcates a particular temporality of sharing. So again, it's not the case that everyone is included, and I'm going to describe how IP, as we see it, is used to demarcate the insides and the outsides of partnership. I'm going to conclude by discussing the work of PDPs in creating a particular domaining effects in pharmaceutical research and development. So the paper draws on two parallel strands of fieldwork that Javier and myself have been conducting, intercollaborative networks, developing new drugs and regimens against tuberculosis and malaria. We've conducted about 24 interviews with informants in product development partnerships, including those within the pharmaceutical industry, legal firms, and academic institutions. So, as you're probably aware, the pharmaceutical industry is facing failing prospects. There's a dearth of new drugs in the pipeline, and a number of drugs are reaching patent expiry. Calls for industry reform are mounting amid the suggestion that the traditional model of drug discovery and development has failed. At the same time, we've seen a lot of public discontent with the pharmaceutical industry's lack of commitment to developing drugs for non-profitable diseases. And this has resulted in these new collaborations, not so new now perhaps, trying to combine commercial interests with not-for-profit organisations in PDPs. In a recent example of this trend, we saw last year the London Declaration on Neglected Tropical Diseases, which was signed by the UK and US governments, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Bank, 13 pharmaceutical companies, and officials from disease-endemic countries. And they all pledged innovative and coordinated action to tackle or eliminate 10 neglected tropical diseases by the end of the decade. Now, the London Declaration is just one instance of a growing trend to bring public and private actors together in this drug development process. And place plays a fundamental role in these developments. The so-called Global South is both the locus of neglected diseases, but also, importantly, the locus of emerging markets. It's a site where billions of neglected lives could be saved, but also where a new middle class is on the rise with money to spend on branded everyday drugs. So histories of disappointment become the stimulus for new geographies of expectation, which focus on the South as the goal of innovation. But this destination is said to be materially ill-equipped to deliver pharmaceutical innovation on its own, and capacity is said to be lacking. So we see the rise of these virtual product development partnerships, apparently placeless organisations, whose mission is to deliver drugs to areas of need and promise in the Global South via distributed networks of expertise and practice. Now, this discourse of the virtual, in effect an erasure of place, is a hallmark of PDPs in global health research. As well as implying economic efficiency, virtualism facilitates a discourse of unconstrained connectivity and network building, as this description of the Drugs for Neglected Diseases initiative illustrates. So I'll just let you read that. The claim of these organisations to be virtual not only reflects a particular business model, but it also constructs the domain of neglected diseases research and advocacy in a particular way. The discourse of the virtual allows a reimagination of positive futures, which are not tied to the cumbersome bureaucratic legacies and the administrative costs of either public institutions or the pharmaceutical industry. So these are futures, if you like, that capitalise on the absence of a solid material identity. Here you can see that the PDP appears as a placeless but networked organisation. It transcends the boundaries of place, culture, organisation and scientific disciplines. It's virtual, hybrid and flexible. These are all very attractive terms. And it thus allows future places to be imagined, which can serve as a resource for the fulfilment of expectations. This occurs in part via the mission of the PDP of helping poor others. So rather than focusing on the places of traditional drug discovery and development, which are historically associated with the evils of Big Pharma, PDPs and other open innovation platforms open up this landscape and materialise the future of a disease-free and empowered Global South. Fundamental to the success of these PDPs is their ability to attract partners from industry and academia. As I've mentioned, the promise of new markets and new innovation landscapes, in their own words, that presents its own attractions, but these are risky endeavours, so joining a network presents a particular set of challenges. The path to drug development covers risky terrain, and the instigators of these PDPs understand that the destination is an unprofitable drug which is going to be launched in a context of weak regulation and the threat of counterfeits. Intellectual property plays a very important role in bringing together these risky networks, which are based both on a virtual model of drug development, but also the promissory futures of emerging markets. And you can see this is noted here by a number of actors in the field, including Nwaka and Ridley, who assert that intellectual property issues are at the heart of crafting a win-win agreement. It's also something that the PDPs themselves proclaim. So the Medicines for Malaria venture, they found that flexible, result-oriented approaches to dealing with intellectual property rights best serve their use as a tool to form and manage collaborations. And one of the most recent instances of these novel IP arrangements, and in this case it's IP sharing, is a recent initiative by the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, to create an accessible database of proprietary assets which are accessible to researchers working on neglected tropical diseases. WIPO Research presents itself as a partnership hub, which offers a searchable database of IP-protected resources, and it makes these accessible to qualified researchers. The information in the database is sourced from pharmaceutical companies, governmental organisations, academic institutions, and some PDPs which have their own proprietary assets. By agreeing to become providers to this partnership hub, the entities agree to list publicly some or all of their patents. So WIPO Research's mission is to accelerate drug discovery and product development through the sharing of IP. But this sharing isn't posited as a direct route to end products, but rather as a means of creating new partnerships. So under this discursive rubric, IP is less about property, ownership, and excluding other people, and much more about creating connections and social lubrication. For example, at the launch of WIPO Research, the CEO of AstraZeneca proclaimed, I think collectively sharing the IP that we have will lead to new partnerships. So far from conventional understandings of IP as instruments of privatisation and monopolisation, in these arrangements, IP appears to be part of a process of connection and transmission. Now, WIPO Research is not alone in heralding IP as this kind of connective tissue that's going to return the lifeblood to drug innovation for neglected diseases. Individual PDPs also present IP as something that can be used to grant tangible reality to otherwise virtual networks. And you can see that down here in the second quote from a PDP executive who says, you know, our PDP is virtual. We need a partner to work with us on certain drug candidates, and one critical element for this partnership is intellectual property. While IP is used as the means for partnering in drug development, it's not used uniformly. A common theme that arose in our interviews was the differential role that IP plays in the imaginary of different actors. So whereas academic institutions are often chastised by their partners for seeking immediate gains from singular pieces of IP, other more powerful actors, such as Big Pharma, prefer to use IP to attract and entangle others in longer-term and relatively open-ended collaborations. Academic institutions and their technology transfer offices, some respondents have argued, insist unreasonably on defining the scope and transactions from the outset, instead of using this initial act of sharing to open up a virtual space of greater, but as yet indefinable, potential. Pharma and PDP representatives spoke of the value of deferring, and in fact, PDPs have to be able to capitalise on the promise and the uncertainty that drug development affords. In the present, this revolves around the generation of further collaborations and the rapid establishment of a product pipeline. In the future, though, the value of a product will only be realised when the viability of particular drugs is finally confirmed. In this way, PDPs serve to establish a public domain with a very particular temporal structure. This new pharmaceutical common is posited as a sort of a holding bay for interventions and inventions of questionable value prior to their enclosure at an unspecified point in the future. And you can see this, this executive says here, by putting it into the public domain, we're essentially deferring what the rights and obligations of each of the parties will be until we find a combination that's really worth developing. So the ability to defer, to actively postpone proprietary entitlements, is a very good indicator of the differentials of power and accountability that traverse the field of global health research. It seems that the partners with the most power are quite happy to move forward with relatively unspecified agreements, in the knowledge that this power relation is still going to be to their advantage further down the drug development process. And this is not least because they'll often retain the legal and infrastructural resources, which could be patents, but also things like expertise and research facilities, which makes them an obligatory point of passage for any downstream development. So PDPs enact some very obvious forms of exclusion, and we think that it's IP that demarcates the boundary between the inside and the outside of these communities of sharing. In short, those who are able to share IP become full members of the network, but on the other hand, those who are involved in these enterprises but don't participate in the sharing of IP are by the same token declared external to the network. One interesting example here concerns contract research organisations, CROs. While they carry out much of the infrastructural work in drug development, they're virtually never considered or listed as partners in these networks. And the manager of one PDP put it like this: we don't have that kind of relationship with a CRO or with many different fee-for-service organisations. So I think the best way to think about it is fee-for-service, where we mandate what's done, we own all the rights that come out of it, and we can fire them tomorrow if we want to, and we control everything, versus a partnership, which is much more collaborative. There's usually joint licences back and forth. So the exclusion from membership in the network of those who perform fee-for-service work in the benefit of the partnership serves to maintain the public identity of the collaboration as a form of open science. CROs epitomise privatised commercial science, and therefore they have to be kept off the public list of partners. You very rarely hear about CROs being partners. A second critical form of exclusion concerns not necessarily what kind of actor is accepted as a partner, but what sorts of assets are purposefully kept out of circulation, in spite of this overwhelming pressure to share. So there are, in other words, certain inalienable possessions that must be protected in face of the imperative to give. And here again, the role of IP is slightly ambiguous. It's not necessarily the case that IP-protected assets are, by definition, the most precious, or that IP operates consistently as the mechanism that confers inalienability. As we saw, it's the ownership of IP that makes an actor a candidate for the partnership and thus triggers relationships of exchange and reciprocity. In discussions of their motivations to engage in drug development partnerships, actors will point to a range of possessions that they hope to get access to, even if these are not the object of formal or explicit transfer. And you can see I've listed a few there. Things such as a wide network of contacts and collaborators, or the big picture on the global portfolio. Now, these probably seem rather intangible returns, but they're also the possessions that that are expected to flow through the network set up by the partnership. They're the goods that actors would like to get access to by means of sharing IP. And we think that this situation resembles Fina's description of practices of gift giving meant to entice actors to share their most valuable possessions. She writes that the seemingly linear aspects of reciprocal give and take are merely overt attempts to become part of, to participate in, or conversely to snare what is not part of that exchange. But as in the examples described by Vina, the desirability of an organisation as a potential partner depends on its ability to protect the inalienable character of those possessions that sustain its authority, i.e. on not transferring or losing ownership over the assets that establish uniqueness, despite this frenzy of sort of sharing and reciprocity. So in this new world of open innovation for neglected diseases, we argue, IP is construed as the asset that attracts and connects, the object that ties together diverse actors and disparate interests that must join forces in order to facilitate effective drug development. Those who share IP are members of this partnership, but those excluded from this peculiar gift economy are by the same token external to the network, regardless of the significance of their clinical or scientific work. Now, access, as I'm sure you're well aware, is the raison d'etre of the PDPs. They're geared towards making medicines affordable and accessible to neglected populations. But access is relevant not only to these populations, perhaps sort of the final actors and users in this pipeline, but it applies all along the drug development process. And yet access is rarely defined, and nor is it infinite. It's temporarily circumscribed. The same can be said of this new pharmaceutical public domain. It's a space crafted by the PDPs through the idiom of sharing, but one which rests on expectations of future enclosure, whether that is in the guise of intellectual property rights resulting from drugs for neglected tropical diseases, or in the guise of profits from drugs from unrelated diseases in so-called emerging markets. So we often hear that, they might be, one person told us, These drugs for neglected diseases are like the loss leader in the supermarket. I might have a great drug for dengue, but what I'm really looking at is in 10 or 15 years' time bringing in my diabetes drug or whatever. So the public domain is both a temporal and a temporary other to the private domain. Value is linked to the deferral of the enclosure because this deferral keeps open and expands the channels of collaboration in the present. The network extends itself through the promise of revisiting intellectual property rights at a specified point in the future. In the meantime, the larger and longer the network, the more valuable for everyone involved. So it is that public and private become hyphenated in research for neglected tropical diseases. For as Corey Hayden has proposed, quote, the pharmaceutical public domain is not just an undifferentiated space of enhanced access and flow. It comes into force not against restrictive pharmaceutical patent regimes, but bundled neatly with them. So public and private, we argue, are not just spatial domaining effects, but also temporal domaining effects. And we need to ask what power differentials this temporal constitution upholds. The imperative to share in order to be party to global health partnerships enacts a double exclusion, we suggest. Exclusion in the present by not being the bearer of property, i.e. having nothing to share, and exclusion in the future by not having had property in the past and therefore having no claims over the fruits of collaboration. This is clearly a vicious cycle for the poor in general and for researchers in resource-limited settings in particular, who often reside in the places where so-called neglected populations are to be found. According to our analysis, the exclusions that are enacted by sharing are coterminous with the exclusions associated with acts of privatisation, throwing into doubt the normative assumption that sharing and partnering are goods in and of themselves. Thank you.